Birthing from the Inside Out is a place where we gather to talk about how pregnancy and birth transform us. I'm your host, Shannon Backus, certified birth doula and childbirth educator for over 10 years. I hope you'll grab a cup of coffee and join us for fun, gritty, and educational conversations all about birth. From detailed birth stories to insights from birth professionals and birth-related services, each episode will help you evaluate just how transformed by birth you've been from the inside out. Disclaimer, this podcast does not provide medical advice or diagnoses. All content is for educational purposes only. Seek the advice and recommendations of your medical practitioner. Have you enjoyed listening to Birthing from the Inside Out podcast? By now, we all know about the algorithm. By leaving your ratings and reviews on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and Google Podcasts, you'll help other people just like you find the show. Birth transforms us all from the inside out, so by simply following, rating, and reviewing, you'll be helping other families have positive, transformational experiences as they carry these stories into their births. On today's episode, I'm joined by my guest, Laurel, who shares with us her experience of giving birth to her first baby in the hospital. I do want to give an adequate trigger warning here at the beginning of the episode. Laurel's story does include obstetric violence, and we do talk about that trauma. Laurel graciously shares how her own experience in birth mobilized her to do something with her trauma and to empower others. Laurel's story is separated into two episodes, so in place of a transformative short episode, I hope you'll join us right back here in 2 weeks for a redemptive and healing part two of Laurel's transformative story.
Birth is intense. Mm-hmm. All the things that I hated about my birth are also what drew me to birth work. The intensity, the transformation, what you have to give up, no matter how you have your baby, it asks everything of you. So I started to kind of like heal as I'm understanding like, oh, there were moments in my birth that shouldn't have happened. And there were moments in my birth that transformed me. Mm. I think transformed you too. Mm. It was intense.
Hey, Laurel, thanks so much for jumping on Birthing from the Inside Out podcast. And I am so delighted to have you on the show today. You are such a dear person to me, and I am just honored that you would take time to share your birth stories with us and to talk with us about how birth has transformed you from the inside out. Laurel was a client of mine who, as we were just reminiscing about just about 2 months into the COVID pandemic, we had a baby together. And so just thinking even about that and all of the nuances and all of the difficulties that came with that period of time. Yeah, just kind of thinking through what that means to have a baby at the very beginning of the COVID pandemic. So at this point, you've already had another baby and you just did something incredibly significant. So I'm going to let you introduce yourself to our listeners and kind of share what's going on in your life.
Yeah. Thank you so much for having me. I don't really feel like we're doing a podcast. I'm just like, get to chat with Shannon, which.
Yes. That's perfect. That's what I love.
We've had many phone conversations over the years since my birth. And this is just an iteration of that. But yeah, so I'm Laurel. I live in San Diego, California with my spouse and two daughters. And I got to work with Shannon for the birth of my first daughter, Rosalie, and had a great experience with Shannon and a pretty wild birth story that we're going to talk about here shortly. And I just defended my dissertation yesterday. So that's
incredible. That is so amazing. So now we'll just refer to you as Dr. Laurel from here on out. Very well deserved. I am really proud of you. And in that time, you've had two babies and wow, that's incredible.
Yes, it was all a labor of love.
Well, tell us a little bit more about who you are. Laurel, I know that you just finished your doctoral. Do you call it a dissertation or a thesis?
My dissertation. Yeah, I defended that and I teach English and writing. So I have been, studying and researching English studies for the last couple of years and just finished my doctorate. I live with my wonderful spouse, John, and like I said, my two daughters, Rosie and Alina. I was in Illinois. That's where I met Shannon, and we moved back home. I'm originally from California, and it was funny. Shannon just asked me, like, what are you doing next? And I said, I think I'm going to rest. I'm going to do some rest, some serious rest. So that's kind of who I am. I love literature. I love academia. And I also love nature. We love living here in San Diego where the weather's a little more warm than Illinois. I don't know how we survived those cold winters, but we do a lot outside, a lot of gardening, a lot of time with friends, a lot of visiting local breweries and game nights and all kinds of stuff. So we're pretty low key, but we're lucky to live near family out here too. So we have a good support system.
That's so special. And one really important thing you haven't mentioned yet, Laurel, is that over the course of the last few years, you've also become a doula. So that's really exciting that you have kind of taken your experience through labor and birth and now are transforming other people's lives because of your experience. So I know we'll get into talking more about your role as a doula. But first, I just really want to dive in to Rosie's birth. Mm-hmm. You are welcome to share as much or as little. And just a little caveat here, and this will be in the show notes too, but we will be talking a little bit about obstetric violence in this episode. And so if you have little ears listening or you yourself are sensitive to this topic, you can go ahead and pause or just turn the podcast off. But we are going to talk about obstetric violence and how that affects our lives as women.
Yeah, thank you for that content warning. I feel like I'm going to take a good deep steadying breath, because that can always, whether it's happened to you or happened to other people, that can always be a little bit, you know, decentering. Yeah. So Rosie's birth. So I got pregnant with Rosie in 2019. My spouse and I had only been married like a year and a half. Now I look back and I'm like, what were we thinking? Mm-hmm. No, we had a plan. We had it all timed out and we got pregnant and we were in Illinois because I was doing my doctoral work there and all of our families in California. And so I knew that I really wanted a doula because I didn't know that we would be able to have family who could fly out spontaneously. You know, you can't really plan when you have a baby. So, I mean, you can, but we were planning on waiting for a baby to come if that was safe. So I don't even know why I knew about doulas. I think there was just like probably I read it somewhere and then pinged it in the back of my head thinking like, okay, support sounds nice, you know. Mm-hmm. I was candidly very nervous about the birth aspect of like the actual labor and birth aspect of the whole kind of having a baby experience. And so having a guide felt really important to me. So I went on doulamatch.com and I found Shannon. And I think kind of just after reading your website, I was like, I think we would jive. She looks cool. So we met. Like, I remember being so nervous to drive to you. I was eating goldfish in the car because I was so nauseous. And we drove and we met with you and I felt like we were talking with a friend, which I feel like now being a doula, some of my like my clients who I've been most in flow with, it's always kind of been there from the beginning, you know, like there's just kind of like a sense. And I think that's like why it's so important to interview different people, because you really see who you're comfortable with. Mm-hmm. And like, you almost want to somebody who you can have fun with. Like, I remember us laughing a lot, because what I didn't know at that time is that birth can be really fun and funny too. You know, it's not all this big scary thing. So, and we had some funny moments, but, since being a, you know, being a birth worker, I have so many thoughts. Oh my God. It's so juicy.
Well, I actually kind of wanted to ask you, okay, so now that you are a doula, looking back on Rosie's birth, like, what could I have done different, or what could we as a team have done differently? So if you want to delve into that question, we can go there.
I mean, I feel like I have so much more nuance and like, not like grace for everybody, but like a little bit, you know, I think we can talk more about this too, but just John and I were just talking last night about like having a baby 2 months into COVID when like none of us knew anything. And there was a lot of potential reason to be afraid because we didn't know how to protect ourselves. And so we were talking about how that really, we think that really affected the birth. And I don't, I think I haven't ever like said that out loud.
Yeah, to explore that. Yeah, for sure.
And I would assume the providers as well, you know.
Yeah. All of that to say there was no excuse.
Yes. Yeah. Not yes. No
excuse at all.
But you know what? And I can talk about this too. Like, unfortunately, I see it all the time. This is it's standard. And I don't think I understood that before. Again, not saying it's right.
Mm-hmm. I think for me, like, not that it's about me at all, but just kind of unpacking my trauma from your birth, I've just thought a lot about how I've really safeguarded my practice and safeguarded myself from burning out. And that's really by choosing the hospitals that I know respect my doula practice. And they, like, we're all on the same page. They know I'm not there to take over or do anything like that. I'm just part of the team. And also to work with providers that are the same, you know? So I think I was just shook to my core because it like comes down to the idea of trust, right? Like, like completely shattered my trust.
Yeah. And you had good experience. I remember that. Like,
yeah.
I think that like Rosie's story informs so many of the decisions I made for Aline about Alina. And I feel like that would be really helpful for people to hear because I have so many clients who are like, I'll have the hospital birth the first time and I'll just do it differently the second. And I'm like, no, you don't understand. Like, you need to safeguard yourself. And again, I'm not anti-hospital, but you need to safeguard yourself against trauma.
Yeah.
If you want to like thinking about a vaginal birth, increasing your chances. Like, there are just so many aspects that you can use. There's evidence-based information that you can use to find providers and places to birth that are going to set you up for your entire reproductive journey. And it's not just like, oh, the first birth, you know, because your first birth is impactful. Yeah. As we all know.
And honestly, sometimes you don't get a second chance.
Right. Like,
either the trauma is so bad that you cannot recover from it. Mm-hmm. Sometimes you lose your reproductive organs.
Right.
Oh, yeah. Like, you don't always get a second chance. So that's really wise of you to share that. Yeah.
Yeah. So I'd love to like share Rosie.
Okay.
I'd love to talk about our work because, I mean, I loved having you as a doula. It was you saved us, I felt. Yeah. And then second, I'd love to talk about my experience a little bit with Alina because it was very redemptive.
Yes. And I think people need to hear that because I think people oftentimes think, you know, oh, I'm going to have this great vaginal birth. It's going to be rainbows and unicorns. And it just doesn't always happen that way. And that's just the reality of birth. I mean, you've seen it because you've lived it, but you're also supporting people through that. But I think people need to hear the story that is not the end of the story. Like, you can, it's not like you can manifest it. I do not believe that, but you can work really hard, like you have done, to have a different story and choose different providers, choose different, you know, birthing location and just like you said, knowing the evidence-based options. Yeah.
Yeah. So I did a lot of preparation. Like, as an academic, I research everything. I love to over research. In fact, I had to like start setting a limit on myself because I just was like, I'm reading too many of these birth books. But I remember I was like, this was before I hired you, Shannon, but it might not have been. I think I hired you at like 8 weeks or something, 10 weeks. I was very on it. Now I'm like, wow, I had so much mobility with my second pregnancy. I feel like I just laid in bed for months. But I remember reading Ina May's book at like 6 weeks pregnant. And was sort of horrified because, you know, there are all these wonderful descriptions of physiologic birth, but it was a little too much that early on. So I would say I overconsumed, but it was my way of trying to calm my anxiety about birth. I think a lot of people do that. And then some people also are like, I'm not going to read anything because I'm just going to sort of like ignore it. And both ways are kind of like, we're all coping. Okay. So yeah, so we hired Shannon. I felt really good about it. I had planned to give birth at a hospital and was working with an OB group. And I remember, Shannon, having several conversations with you as I was going into my appointments. Something that's really important to me is, well, now I know, at the time, I think I was still figuring this out, but finding providers who value a health at every size perspective. I have a history of disordered eating, and I think this doesn't get talked about enough in the perinatal space. There is so much diet talk and diet culture in pregnancy and postpartum. And it is not helpful, especially for people who are recovering from disordered eating. And unfortunately, OBs are kind of the worst. Like, I mean, I remember being in an appointment, seeing like a weight loss ad on the wall. Mm-hmm. Like, why are we should be telling women like, okay, here's what to eat. You know, here's how to feel your body. You're making a life. You're nursing. You're recovering from whatever, however your birth ends up. I couldn't articulate that at the time, I don't think, because I was very early on in that journey, but I remember just that being a red flag for me. And I remember talking about it with you, Shannon, about a couple different things, and you were so gentle, but you were kind of like, I don't know. I just remember you saying like, pay attention to those. So I ended up switching providers. I don't know if you remember this, Shannon. I switched providers for 32 weeks. I found an OB that
How many weeks were you?
It was like 32 weeks.
Okay.
It's pretty wild. I found a provider that I felt way more comfortable with. And so I use that with my clients. I see like unless they won't take you later, which luckily I was pretty low risk. And so I wasn't in need of like intensive care in my pregnancy, but you can always fire your provider like at any moment. Mm-hmm. And I remember you telling me you don't even have to break up with her. Mm-hmm. You don't even have to call. You just like don't schedule to your next appointment. So I found a different OB that I jived with better. And then COVID hit. Mm-hmm. We were in California for my baby shower. On the 10th of March, I think it was. And I think it was like the 11th when everything mm-hmm. shut down.
Yep.
And we flew home on the 10th. And then it was like the world was quiet.
Mm-hmm.
We were so afraid. And I was like, 30 weeks, I can't even remember. I was in my third trimester, kind of the middle to end of it. Anybody who had a baby during that time remembers all of those scary conversations about what if your baby gets COVID? Are they going to make you birth alone? I have friends who birthed alone. Mm-hmm. Are they going to take your baby away from you? I had like downloaded forms to like ready in my hospital bag to, you know, like fight the system if they're going to like take my baby. It was a time of great fear for all of us,
mm-hmm.
but I think in a particularly like scary way for birthing people, right? Like, and they're like the whole team. I remember we had to switch birthing locations like 2 weeks before because mm-hmm. there was one hospital that was allowing doulas. And so you had told me and we immediately were like, okay, we're going there. We needed to have you with us. I waited and waited and my estimated date came and passed and I woke up one morning at like 41 and I think it was two, 41 and two. And I was having contractions and I was so mm-hmm. excited. It was like 3 a.m. and they were those little buzzy contractions. And they kind of continued on throughout the day, really mild. And then things started to get more intense, right? As they do. Now I know my early labors, I mean, for both of my girls were pretty long compared to some people I've seen. And also pretty standard for labor and certainly for first-time moms, right? But yeah, I remember calling you and things were starting to feel more intense and Shannon came over and we started to do, I can't quite remember. We started to do some different like position changes and I was, you know, continuing to eat. And the thing is, I remember in my head, because I had done so much research, I'd listened to so many birth stories, so many podcasts, right? Like Birthful and The Birth Hour. And I just ate those stories up. I remember thinking the whole time when things started to get a little more intense. Oh, you know what? I'm sorry. Let me go back. I remember starting to have a lot of back labor kind mm-hmm. of a little bit before you came. And that was when the first moment I started to feel afraid.
Mm-hmm.
And so we called you, you came, and the back labors continued to get like terrible. And the other thing was we were kind of religiously timing my contractions because of course you do that as a first time, you know, birther, but I wish I would have just like put that thing away. But mm-hmm. like my advice to my clients is like, don't time your contractions
mm-hmm.
or do it for two or three and then put yes. it away, right?
Yeah. I typically tell people just time your contractions for an hour. If they're 8 minutes apart, turn it off. Like go do something else. You are not in active labor.
Yes. Yes. Mm-hmm. You will get tired of like pressing the button.
Mm-hmm.
And it does mess with your mind. But yeah, I just remember the whole time when my back labor started, I remember thinking, this doesn't feel right. Like there was something in me that was like, something is off. And it's hard to know, was that just like fear or was that my gut? I tend now to think it was my gut that something was off. So things started to get very intense that night. I remember being on the bed and being terrified. And I think I remember you suggesting some sideline release, like some spinning baby stuff. I'm sure you were thinking back labor, OP, you know, like how do we put this baby? And I was not in a space to even like want to try that. I remember now I'm kicking myself because I make my client, I don't make my clients, but I, you know, I get clients into those positions all the time. And luckily a lot of them are willing, but I'm like, why? I was too afraid. Mm-hmm. I was too afraid to move. And so I feel like in the middle of the night, we were like, okay, I think it's maybe time to go. I'm not sure why we went. I think I was starting to get afraid. And I think there was some talk about an epidural. Mm-hmm. And I had really, really, really wanted to go unmedicated. And just to backtrack a bit, Shannon, like I remember you suggesting, hey, you should tour the local birth center. And I went and I toured and I heard, this is funny, I heard a woman in labor, like she like pushed her baby out while I was there. I was like very nauseous, of course, because it wasn't the first trimester. And I left like shaking because I was so terrified of how embodied her birth sounded. Mm-hmm. I was terrified. And I remember being on the phone with you and you said, you cannot birth somewhere where you don't feel safe. Mm-hmm. So I kind of quickly wrote that out. Mm-hmm. Again, looking back, kicking myself. Come on. Mm-hmm. I didn't know. My mantra as a parent is you're doing the best with the resources that you have in that given moment, right?
Yes. Yeah.
And absolutely. In that moment, I think the hospital was the safest place for me because I wasn't ready. Mm-hmm. I wasn't ready to explore something outside of that. And I wish I would have been ready now looking back at what happened, but this is life. And there's some grief there. Like there's some just some grief to be felt. And I've had to, I've been faced with that, you know? So back to my birth, we got to the hospital. They checked me and I was at a 6. So we were moving towards that active labor, right? But the back labor was just, I was so in my head. I just was like, it felt like someone was just like, took a crowbar and was just like whacking me on the back or like squeezing me. Mm-hmm. And we did all kinds of stuff. The funny thing is I remember not even wanting to get in the shower. I was very frozen. I feel like I was frozen. And that is kind of like foreshadowing.
Let's take a moment to hear from our sponsor. Hey, Birthing from the Inside Out community. If you are pregnant or anywhere in your postpartum and dealing with any kind of low back pain, pelvic floor issues, or any other joint and muscle problems, Dr. Lauren Jordan at Jordan Spine and Rehab Center in Bloomington can help you. She specializes in women's health musculoskeletal care for the pregnant and postpartum mamas, as well as kiddos. She will cater her treatment to help you achieve your goals and get back to living your life pain-free and functional. She's not your typical chiropractor, though. Say no to long treatment plans and unnecessary extra treatments and say yes to specialized care with someone you can trust. Call or text Dr. Lauren Jordan directly at 309-431-2357. Again, that's 309-431-2357 to get an appointment scheduled today.
We get to the hospital. I labor there for a couple more hours and I got an epidural. I think I had a lot of guilt at the time that I've now worked through. I felt like, oh, am I failing? I actually think now looking back, it was the ideal tool for me, within that system and within that, like that freeze that I was in, because it did allow me to rest. It allowed everyone to rest because it wasn't just me that was tired. Like this was a long birth. So we labor through the next day. I think the doctor checked me in. Ooh, I'm at a 10. Okay. I think we might've labored down a little bit. When she checked me though, my water broke and I'm always this, I'm just like ding, ding, ding. Now as a birth worker, I'm like, freaking broke my water.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I think she did, because unless the bag is really low and really, really taut, which it could have been, like, I think she broke my water, which makes me mad. because I didn't consent to that. Mm-hmm. You know, just a little beige flag there. So then I started pushing and we were so excited to push. And
Laurel, what time of day would you say that?
Oh gosh, yes.
That happened. Do you remember?
I feel like it was like maybe 10 a.m. or 12 p.m., like between 10 and 12 the next day.
Okay. So maybe we had been at the hospital like 7 or 8 hours.
And at that point, just since those early contractions, it had been like a day and a half or so,
mm-hmm.
which is, again, within the normal range of a first mm-hmm. birth, a little longer maybe than you hope. So we start pushing, I don't know, at like 1 or 2 or I don't know, something somewhere around there. And we're pushing and we're doing all the things. And we have this nurse that, do you remember this, Shannon? Our nurse mm-hmm. was like, wah, wah.
mm-hmm.
God bless her.
She was really hesitant for us to use any of the spinning babies techniques that I had been trained in and had used very successfully in multiple births. I think she was really hesitant to do any of that, mostly primarily because you had an epidural. Mm-hmm. And so movement in the bed was restricted.
But I was so mobile. I remember mm-hmm. I could feel
you were.
It was a great epidural.
It was a really good epidural. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I felt that she was threatened by you.
Mm.
There was like some weird energy and it wasn't you, mm. like you were great. And now having been a birth worker, knowing like that can be such a strange dynamic when you don't feel welcome in the room, like, mm-hmm.
yeah, lots of dynamics going on. Mm-hmm. But I do remember there was a shift change. Do you remember that?
With our second nurse who had been in triage before.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. And that was when things started to happen. So mm-hmm. just to backtrack, I remember after about 3 hours of pushing, the OB came in and it wasn't my OB. It was the other OB that was on. So they were gone. And so it was the on-call OB. I remember being very excited to see her. She had, you know, she had checked me earlier and we labored down, started pushing. She came in and we started pushing. And I just remember, as OBs tend to do when women with epidural push, she inserted her fingers in and I could feel it, right? Like I could feel most everything. Again, great epidural. Don't feel a lot of the pain, but feel a lot of the sensation. And it was so distracting and I felt so uncomfortable. And she would like say, push. And then she would push down on my perineum as like, okay. And sometimes this can be very helpful if it's consented to, right? Like mm-hmm. I've seen this be a very helpful tool, especially when people's epidural is really dense, that providers can provide gentle and consentful pressure on the perineum. But I wasn't consenting. I don't remember anybody asking me. And I remember getting so like flustered and just saying like, please, please take your hands out of me. And at the end, just like, please, please just like, can I just push without your hands in me? And I asked like 3 or 4 times and finally the provider took her hands out and she like whipped off her gloves and she said, fine, I won't come back for another hour or something like that. And then she kind mm-hmm. of like stormed out of the room. And there was just this moment where I just lost it. And I had mm-hmm. a panic attack because mm-hmm. there was my provider who, I mean, we had been pushing a long time. I was tired. I hadn't eaten, mm-hmm. hadn't slept. None of us had. I was afraid something felt wrong. My provider abandons me
mm-hmm.
and is putting her hands in me without consent, right? Like mm-hmm. this is the obstetric violence piece. It was very devastating. I remember my spouse just having to like really console me. And luckily we came back together and that was when the nurse shift change happened and our angel mm-hmm. nurse came on board. Mm-hmm. This is where it's like your providers really make or break your experience, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And she had been the nurse who had checked me in triage and she was wonderful. And she came in and she worked. I just felt the mood change.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you had done births with her before because I remember mm-hmm. you saying, hey, I don't know can you tell where the baby is? So she said, hey, Laurel, can I check you again? She checked and I just remember her like really trying to get in there. But it felt so different
mm-hmm.
with her checking. I felt like hope. And I was like, yes, please do. Versus like someone's hands in you that you're like, get out of me.
Mm-hmm.
And she was like, I think I feel an ear.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So she goes back to the provider. And basically the nurse had discovered that my daughter was asynclit, which is like a little, she's in there a little wonky, right? Like her head was kind of, it had come down probably because my provider had broken my water too soon. It had come down and like, you know, was sort of in the pelvis tilted. I don't know. Is that how you would describe asynclitis?
Yeah. Yes. So I would also say too, that that asynclitic presentation, I think that that probably contributed a lot to your back labor.
Yes.
And I think had we been able to utilize more of the spinning babies techniques and more of, you know, the different positions, sometimes babies don't turn right or reorient their head until they hit the pelvic floor. And at this point, Rosie wasn't that far down. Like she was, I remember her station was still pretty high. And I was thinking, like, what are we doing? Like, why can we not get this baby to come down? And so I remember pleading with the nurse and saying, please, can you figure out what position this baby is in so that I know what positions to get this girl in. And I just kept remembering, like, if somebody could tell me where the baby is, what position the baby's in, then we can get this baby out. And so once we had that key information, I remember we kind of went to work. Like, you know, we were trying to do different things. And like you said, you use the word hope. I think that, you know, once we finally had a few more pieces of the puzzle, we were able, and that even empowered you, I think, Laurel, to get past the fear and 100%. Get past. And so kind of just reorienting and putting a new narrative on what was happening. And okay, now we know a few more pieces of this puzzle. And so let's move forward with that information.
Yeah. It was, I remember that it was a palpable change in the room for everybody. I can't quite remember. We pushed a significantly longer amount of time. Like I think I pushed total almost 6 hours, which is wild to me, but it didn't feel like, it felt like a long time, but it didn't feel like 6 hours because there were these moments of like devastation and then hope and then a shift change, you know, like it was very, it was very up and down. I do remember at a certain point, the provider came back and she had spoken with the nurse and was a very, I think she came back in and said, can I check? And I was like, yes, I think we know what's going on now. She's going to confirm. Well, here's the kind of moment of obstetric violence. That was probably the hardest moment of my labor. I think she went to check and she, I didn't know this, but all of a sudden I was in like the most pain of my life, which is bizarre because I had an epidural, right? But she, I now know she had put her hand, her entire hand inside me and was trying to turn the baby, which I'm like, okay, logically, okay. But like, can we talk about consent? Can we talk about a warning? Can we talk about, hey, Laurel, I really want to manually see if I can move your baby's head because I really want you to have a vaginal birth. That, those words would have been, would have changed my experience so much. That would have, and then saying, can I, may I would have said yes in a heartbeat. I was ready to get that baby out.
You were.
Yeah. And she would have said, okay, take a deep breath and you'll feel my touch. And she would have said, and I, this is a consenting, you know, like a consenting conversation would have sounded like, if you need me to stop at any point, you either put your hand up or shake your head. Like consent isn't always verbal, right? So, but that did not happen. She put her hand in me and tried to turn the baby and everyone just kept saying like, okay, take a breath, take a breath. I didn't even know it was happening. I was just in pain. She left and I remember just feeling like, just give me a cesarean. She comes back. She's a different person because I think that she felt, I think that she felt Rosie was high and I think that she felt that she was stuck, right? And she said, look, you have two options. We can try a vacuum. And then the other option was we can do a cesarean. And I remember saying, let's do a cesarean. And my wonderful spouse who had let me guide this entire experience, not because he's timid, but because that's just who he is. Like he's so respectful of what I want. He stepped in and he said, can you do just a couple more pushes with the vacuum? And I think you were very much like, let's just try it, Laurel. And so it was like your guys's hope. It gave me the tiniest bit back. And I remember every, you know, when they do a vacuum delivery, an operative delivery, everyone comes in the room, like looking in the room. Long story short, I closed my eyes. I kind of turned off my brain and then did a vacuum. And on the third try, because you only have three tries if the vacuum pops off, just because they want to be mindful about, you know, baby's head. She started to come out. Everyone said, Laurel, you can do it. You can do it. It was like everyone in the room was just knew they could see, you know, that she was coming. And mind you, this all took place in like 30 seconds, right? But it feels so long in my brain. She came to my perineum and I remember opening my eyes and my doctor said, Laurel, I never do this, but I need to do an episiotomy. And I said, no, it's not on my birth plan. Like anything had gone, you know, nothing. We were way off the map at this point. But I looked at you and I will never forget this moment. You said, Laurel, do it. It will get your baby out. And I said, okay. And it was like blind trust in you, Shannon. And so they cut it was about a second degree episiotomy and she came right out and she was healthy and good. And she came onto my chest and there was Rosie and Rosie Joy was in the world. And she had a little hematoma on her head, but we were all crying and it was very emotional. And there was a lot of processing that had to be done after that. I'm really grateful that my postpartum experience was pretty smooth. We had, despite it being COVID, we had a lot of support in town and oh man, breastfeeding went relatively smooth compared to, you know, a lot of things that could have happened. My girls did have some both of them had some oral restrictions, but we were able to work that out with body work. And I did choose to get phrenectomies done. We could have a tongue tie conversation a whole other day. Yeah. I have all kinds of thoughts on that. But always with body work and always with other support. So yeah, definitely felt grateful for that. But I had a lot of emotional trauma at birth, and particularly from those moments of obstetric violence. And Shannon and I talked a lot and tried to put those puzzle pieces together so much. And there were a lot of things out of our control. Looking back, like, I don't know, I tried to make meaning of it. I tried to figure it out. And I think as it kind of sat, I just started to get more angry and more angry and more angry, which I think is really healthy. I confronted weeks later, I wrote a letter to the OB. We had a meeting. She said nothing. She did not even apologize. And there was a representative there. And I just kept thinking, she's afraid I'm going to sue her. I actually ended up reporting her to the board, to the medical board for obstetric violence. Nothing came of it. So they didn't like move it through to investigate, but that was a really important like step for me, I think, just like some sort of accountability, you know, like their name is on a list somewhere. And I think that really, really pushed me into birth work. I mean, I had a relatively smooth postpartum and then my dad died at 4 months postpartum, big bomb. And there was so much grief about my birth and there was so much grief about my dad and there was so much sadness and like anger that it had to go somewhere. And so I started thinking, what would it look like to be a doula, to start to like, to really confront these systems that really failed me, right? The medical industrial complex, the fact that providers, and it's not just OBs. A lot of providers think women's bodies are theirs too. Their women's bodies are just vessels to have babies, especially if you have an epidural, right? You can't feel anything. Consent is lacking in so many ways. And so I started to get mad and I said, okay, I'm going to try. I need to mobilize. This is what I do in my life. I'm like, I have pain. I'm a Scorpio. So I'm like, I'm having pain. I'm going to transform it for good. So I did. I signed up for a doula training. I trained through birthing advocacy doula trainings, which is funny. But that's the name. It makes so much sense that that's the program I chose. Really consent forward, really intersectional, very mindful of people's positionalities and really inclusive, safe, trauma-informed space to train in. And then I started going to births and I was like, wow, birth is intense. All the things that I hated about my birth are also what drew me to birth work. The intensity, the transformation, what you have to give up. I mean, you literally go to the underworld and back to get your baby, no matter how you have your baby. It asks everything of you. So I started to kind of like heal as I'm understanding like, oh, there were moments in my birth that shouldn't have happened. And there were moments in my birth that transformed me. I think transformed you too. It was intense. I'm so curious. So that's kind of like my version. Like for you, I know there were some of those same moments for me that stuck out that were really hard. Like I want to hear about, and you've told me some of this, but like how my birth affected you, Shannon, like as a birth worker.
There's a really great book, The Body Keeps the Score. You know, as a birth worker, I have done a lot of reading about trauma and about how that changes our brains and how our bodies just keep score of the trauma that we experience in life. And so as you were explaining, I'm like, oh yeah, my body's remembering this.
Yeah.
My shoulders are really high and my back is tense and I'm starting to sweat. And I think for me, you know, Rosie's birth, I was not a new doula at this point. I had actually worked with this provider multiple times, been at the same hospital multiple times. And I think for me, the way that your birth transformed me as a doula was to really become more trauma-informed. You know, that was one transformative aspect of the birth for me. And I think too, you know, just thinking about how that experience has impacted and changed other births that I've been in since your birth, just being able to have maybe different vocabulary to, you know, share with a client like, hey, I noticed, you know, this is happening or this is coming. What do you think about that? And being able to, you know, kind of give a little bit of a light down the road of what's coming or what's happening.
Yeah, I think you're so right. I actually did a lot of, luckily I had a great therapist who is licensed in something called somatic experiencing. So you mentioned the body keeps the score. It's kind of all this, the same idea, right? That in order to heal trauma, you really have to do it in your body because trauma lives in our body and birth happens in your body. So it's ripe for trauma, right? And so I did a lot of work to address my birth trauma. Also, my little one is here hiccuping, so you might hear that. But I did a lot of work to heal that trauma. And I think some of that healing was in a similar way, Shannon, for me, like becoming a birth worker. And I mean, I have been to births weirdly similar to mine, you know, where I'm like, there has to be a reason I'm here, you know? I really feel you in that discussion of like, there are power dynamics at play in birth.
Mm-hmm.
Birth is political. We know this, right? It's about so many other things than just bringing a baby into the world. It's about consent. It's about choice. It's about bodies. And I think like having been in similar situations where I'm the doula, it's been really interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Like there's questions about even consent with clients. Like, is it ethical to jump in and, you know, and save your client? But what if you get kicked out of the hospital room and then you can't be there when your client needs you, you know? So it's not cut and dry and it's not simple and it's really nuanced. And you're right. Like, I really do believe like that prenatal education, those prenatal education pieces. And it's, I think for me, when I look back, I'm like, I did so much work in my head. I really wish I would have like done a bit more to get more embodied, because I think I would have listened to my gut. I would have loved to have yelled at that doctor, get out of my birth space. And I was, I go to fawn, I appease, right? And I'm traumatized. Sometimes I fight if I feel safe enough, but now I fight because I've done a lot of work. But no, I just wanted to please everyone in that room. And I really wish I would have said, get the F out of this space. You are not welcome here. Get me a new provider.
And legally, they would have had to. Had that been your choice, the hospital would have had to provide you with a different provider.
And we know we actually know the other providers who were on call because they were in our room when I had the baby. But so maybe would not have been a better experience. But certainly, I think that trauma happens when choice is taken away from us. And so, I mean, and it's a nuanced conversation. Not every client is going to feel safe in a hospital room. Certainly women of color, certainly anyone from marginalized groups, right? We all are afforded different levels of power and agency. We know that. And you're right. You can go into the system knowledgeable and informed. And you honestly, it's about choosing your provider.
I love how powerful stories are in our lives, how much they can change a person, how our stories tell others about who we are and where we are headed,
And not just how much those stories can change us, but also change the trajectory of our lives. Thank you for spending time in your day to dive deep into stories of how birth has transformed all of us from the inside out.